My name's Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. I have a home group that's a West Connect group in Jacksonville, Florida. I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor, and her sponsor has a sponsor, and so on and so forth. And I love this conference. I love this conference. I am so grateful that you guys put it on. It is just amazing. So do whatever we can to keep it going. It is just, it's just amazing. I feel one of my gifts is that we've been coming to this conference since the second one. At the second one at Callaway Gardens, as we've been coming to this conference, and I love it. It's one of the greatest things that we look forward to. I love the hotel. I just love everything about it. So it's just keep it up. Keep it up, Dick and Barbara. Keep it up. It's just we'll make it happen. And I would love to be, there's nothing worse than having to go first. When I'm have Bob and Mildred here, I want them to go first so I can copy what they say after they say it. And that way, you know, it's hard to be the first one. And especially with two people that I have so much admiration for. And one of the gifts I was thinking about, I have so many gifts of sobriety, but one of the gifts as we were sitting here, and Jane's here, I think about when we were in Bermuda, and we were there with your family and with our family, and we got to do Bermuda. And I just think about how you've had those opportunities. I was sitting there thinking about my grandchildren and what a gift they are. And I was thinking about especially my oldest grandson. And Ryan's 29, is that correct? Ryan is 29 years old. And if you guys have been around and have heard me talk and many years ago, 29 years ago when I was talking, you would have heard about Ryan when he was two. When Ryan was two, he was diagnosed being deaf. And I will tell you, our family truly believed his life was over. It felt like a tragedy in our home and our family, I mean. And if you saw him, and a lot of people did at the International when he was two, the one that we did in San Diego, he had blonde, curly hair. It was the cutest thing you ever saw. And we were just crushed because he was deaf. And I want you to know that Ryan is 29. He is a civil engineer building bridges in Colorado. Graduated from RIT Engineering School. He is far from having any problems. Called me on the phone the other night and said, "Grandma, are we still on for February 9th? He's coming to see Dave and I." And I'm telling you, I look at that and I look back and think what it was like then and where he is today. It is just absolutely amazing. I look at Jane and you're such a gift because I watched my son be so unhappy for so many years. But the thing that he thought was the most important was that he stay and be the best father for his kids. And Jane came along and she told you the story. It was just unbelievable. They met in 2009 and she told God, "I'm going to marry him." And they got married 5 years ago? six years ago. Beautiful gift. She puts a smile on my son's face, and I love that. I'm grateful most of all. Let me start by saying that I should have wrote a list of what I was grateful for, but I was too busy talking at dinner and didn't do it. The thing I am most grateful for, most above all, is Alcoholics Anonymous. If I had not got sober, I would not have the life that I have today. I love my life, and I said that sometimes I do feel like I don't love it, but the truth is I love my life. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me grow spiritually. It has helped me become the woman I always wanted to be. I didn't want to be a screaming maniac that I was to my kids and to my first husband. It has given me, has made me the woman I've always wanted to be. I love my sponsees. I love my sponsees. God has given me, I want to say that I get to sponsor the finest women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And all of them are fine, but mine are a little bit finer. They are amazing, amazing women. And I just want to, I thank God for that. I thank God for the husband that he gave me when I was 3.5 years sober. And we were talking about, as I talked today, what a lady came up to me, and she's a friend of ours, and she said, I want to share, you know, let's us get together because I want to share this season with you and the season that you're in right now, the season of your life. And I want to thank Dave. I love you so much. And we have had a run. We have been able to travel the world. I remember we went to Sydney, Australia, and we were sitting on the back row in economy in an airplane. And I'm telling you, that's a long flight. And what happened is, we were tired, we were worn out, and we got off there, and we were both, well, he's not quite like me, but I'm jumping up and down and screaming, I'm in Australia. How do you get to Australia? How do you get to Bermuda? How do you get to do these things? I got to do these things because I drank too much whiskey and tore my family up and tore myself down and surrendered. Absolutely, God surrendered me. I was surrendered when I got here. And a bunch of people, while I was in treatment, would come pick us up and carry us to meetings and come into that treatment center and bring us the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I fell in love. I absolutely fell in love. And until Dave got sick. It's been 7 years now since Dave got sick. And it wasn't really, it's been, and he's had some stages where it's gotten better and it's gotten worse again. But what has happened in those stages is I have got to meet people, I have got to be introduced, people calling me who've had, you know, similar things, and finding out about other people who have had the same tragedies that we have, and how you have been the man you are. I know how hard it is for you to have to do what you do, but baby, we're going to do it together, and it's going to be okay. And I think about my children. I tell you, I know you heard James talk about when he got sober. I'm kind of all over the map because as it comes into my mind, I'm thinking about it. When you got sober, oh, my God, I was so excited. I wouldn't leave him alone. I had gone to Al-Anon. I had gone to Al-Anon. And my most beautiful Al-Anon story is that my daughter-in-law of my oldest son, he was married, his wife called me and said, Russ has put a pair of scissors in his stomach and he's in the hospital. And I was crazy. And I went to this AA meeting, and it was one of those meetings, does anybody have a subject or something like that? And I stood up and said something about, you know, my son, you know, just put some scissors in his stomach and I'm crazy. And this old guy sitting in the back of the room says, you just need to turn that boy over. And I jumped up in that AA meeting and I said, you want to tell me how to do that? And what happened was I had a miracle. And there was a double winner in that meeting that night. And that double winner says, I'm picking you up tomorrow night at 7:30 and I'm taking you to an Al-Anon meeting. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting that night. And I am so grateful because they tried to teach me how to do it right, but I couldn't help but try to get, you know, to get him sober, tell him where he needed to go. But at that point, I stopped. And I look at my son today, and I am so grateful for you. I am so grateful that you're the man you are. I'm just so grateful. And all the things you do in AA, all the things you do for me. And 4 years ago, the day before Thanksgiving Day, my oldest son will have 4 years of sobriety. He is 62 years old. And so it's never too late. If you think you've got somebody you love, it's never too late. But one of the things that they told me to do is just keep doing. Just keep loving and keep doing. And I have said nothing to Russ. I learned better than to say anything to him. But what I did is I went to California twice a year, every year. We moved from Southern California. I lived just 10 minutes from him when we were there. And we moved from there 20 years ago. And for 20 years, I've been going twice a year to see my son. And he may give me a lunch or a dinner. But I was grateful to take that. All I wanted to do was see him. I had no idea. All I know is that even when we lived close, we just always had some stuff between us. There was just always some stuff. And Russ kind of marches to a different drummer. And he's the first one to tell you that he does. And now I get to, he's got 4 years sober. And he came out just 2 weeks ago and stayed with us for a week. And 1 week, slept in my spare room for 1 week. And that's the first time that that's happened ever, that he has done that. And I can't tell you what a gift that is, that today both my boys are in AA. But what's really good is Jane kind of brought it to me. She said, you know, our wedding sort of started to get James and Russ talking. And Russ is a musician. And he did the music for their wedding. And they started talking. And I have a feeling those conversations maybe helped Russ go in that direction of sobriety and began, because there was no conversation between them either. God has been good. I have been given the keys to the kingdom. I have been able to be sober for 45 years. I can't even believe I'm sitting up here. I can't even believe it. 45 years. And I can tell you, God has been good to me, to my family, to the women I sponsor. I am so blessed. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mildred, and I'm still an alcoholic. Hi. I don't like this evening. I wish we'd do this different. I never know what to talk about. I mean, there's an endless number of things. I don't have to tell you that I'm sober and whatever. So I think I'm going to talk to you about two things that I have found very helpful. Because when it's all said and done, I find that I always love when I read something or I hear something or I'm told something that I can put into practice and that makes life easier. It's been my experience that I can go to meetings and sometimes I can leave that meeting and I don't know that my life is appreciable better. Do you identify with that? If somebody were to say to you the next day, what did you take away from that meeting and how are you better? And I have to say to myself, what am I putting the energy into that for if nobody is better because of it? I mean, I think it's, of course, don't get me wrong, it's better because we stay sober. But I always appreciate when I have some strategies for living. You know, Polly talked a lot about family and situations. My life is very different. Most of my family are gone. I have a lot of nieces and nephews still, but I'm not terribly close to them. I've got work to do. You know, at a time when I was more in communication with them, I was kind of isolated. I grew up feeling very different from those brothers and sisters, and there's a price to be paid for that. So am I grateful for my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous? You bet I am. Am I grateful for the sponsees that I have and for the circle of friends? I have nothing to complain about. I have a wonderful life, and I can make it. I've learned something. And that is, since COVID, I have been very aware of being alone. And, I've always kind of known that, but I used to kind of feel special because I didn't have a family. I was different. I longed to be different. And then I find out I'm different and I don't want to be different. So, I think the thing I've learned is take where you are and make something wonderful out of it. I have got an opportunity to do things that some of my colleagues, for example, from the educational world, they don't have the opportunity that I have because they have other commitments and they have family and so on. And I can take on things that are good for the world. I'm determined to be joyful. I, for a lot of years, was not joyful. Didn't know how to be joyful. Lived in the world of drinking and feeling that all the things I've talked about, and I'm not going to get into that. But it feels to me now that I have been able to learn what the purpose of my life is. And I don't think the purpose of my life is just to be a good person. I think that's great, but I think it's much bigger than that. I think it's to be part of the healing of humanity and waking up to the God self. And I'm not talking about a church religion, because I don't go to a church religion. But, I loved when my friend was telling me the other day that she was at this class at the university, and they were talking about happiness. And she said they made no bones about it. And it's talked a lot at the university about the importance of, of oneness, the importance of being together. And I understand, I also found this out, that recently a Nobel Peace Prize was given to a man who has done some work on entanglement. And what is that about? It's about oneness. And if that is the case, if we are one, and as they were saying at this course, it can't happen without the divine being involved. I said to her, did you hear that correctly? And she said, yes. They talked about, they don't use the term G-O-D because, you know, that gets people's backs up. And I don't think it's wise either, because some people have had a very bad experience with the traditional idea of G-O-D separate. But they're talking about the divine. And I think this way. Now, if I really understand that, I should be joyful. And you know what I have found out? I have to learn to be joyful. I have to remind myself sometimes to smile. I have to remind myself sometimes to see the fun in things and how nice things are, and to consciously appreciate it, not just walk through the world like a lump and nothing is happening, but to appreciate. Like sometimes I go into the greengrocer or the supermarket. I can't believe what I see there. And I just say, you know, God, you're amazing. Just look at all the ideas you had. This celery looks one way and the apples look another way and the oranges are something else. And then you go out and look at all the birds and the fish and the plants and the so on. It's kind of amazing. And then I go out and look at the moon and then I go nuts. Let me look at the moon and you can lead me around by the nose. I love it. So I've just made up my mind that I'm going to enjoy every cup of coffee. I'm going to enjoy, make consciously, be grateful for everything. And, you know, there's so much out there now, people talking about gratitude. And I love the writer of the books, Conversations with God, says. He says, you know, if you're grateful because you've everything is going your way. He said, you know, I'm not so sure that's really gratitude. He said, how about being grateful that you're alive? How about being grateful that there is a spirit and that we can see and that we can, all the wonderful things. And he said that when he has his Thanksgiving, which he will be having next weekend with his family, instead they're all going to go around the table. He has 7 children. And he said, so he was a busy boy too, besides writing Conversations with God. And so they're going to be around the table. And he said, I've instructed them that rather than telling, I'm grateful for this and this and this, tell me something that hasn't happened in your life and that you believe God is preparing for you. And let's be grateful for that. And I thought that, and he said also, he said, you know, if you're grateful because you feel those poor people in the Ukraine, Sonia, don't have what you have, and you'd be grateful because you've got stuff that other people don't. He said he didn't think that was such a good idea either, because there's such another way to look at gratitude. And then gratitude lifts your spirit. So, that's new for me, really, to really put a push. And I think if we don't do it, who's going to do it? You know, all the time I see people, some of my colleagues, they don't have the program. And I know, you know, it. Sometimes I think how fortunate we are. And do we really get the juice out of what's available to us? There's a lot of juice here, if you really think of it. Think of us being together tonight. My colleagues don't have this, to stand in front of a group of people and to be able to talk about things that really matter. You see, and I think this is just wonderful. So, I've learned two things. I won't go into big detail about them. But I learned one of the things, that is that from step one, if I truly believe that I am powerless, and I do, I don't believe I have any power of my own. The book says it. It says there's one who has all power. All. And that means then if I have power, it's not my own. I'm using the power of God. Otherwise, how else are you going to interpret the book? That's what it says. And if I have the opportunity to use the power of God and to realize that's what's out there, perhaps I should be a little easier and let things flow a little better. I have not always been that way. I've been very judgmental and very hateful toward people, and you aren't right the way you are, and I wish you were different, and so on. And just let people be who they are. And what I find is my life is altogether different when I do that. And, you know, I don't do it for this reason, but people have been so gracious to me lately. I was at a party about 6 weeks ago, and I commented because the host made me a cup of coffee. He had a new espresso machine. And I said, "Isn't that lovely? Thank you very much." And the next day, I get a call from him. He said, "Are you home?" And I said, "I am." And he said, "I just bought you an espresso machine." And he said, "You liked it, and I want you to have something that you like." That didn't used to happen to me years ago. You know, and I could go on and talk about some more things like that. You know, and I think about, I look at the friends here and you here, and it, you know, it's amazing. And then the people who came from Tennessee, and Marilyn, my friend, who stand up, Marilyn, and be recognized. She's come. I was teaching a class about 5 years ago, and one day this woman started to show up. We had this class, it was for a treatment center, and she was every 2 weeks we had class, and there she showed up. And then I found out she had to drive 120 kilometers to get there every time she came. And so, you know, I appreciate that kind of thing too, and I appreciate you. We're good friends, so she comes with me sometimes. So the last thing that I want to say is I have learned to appreciate meditation. And, you know, it's one thing to say God is here. You know, we read that. Either God is, you know, is everything or nothing. If God is everything, then God is here. And somebody pointed out to me, so is energy filling the room. We don't see the energy, but it's here. We know it's here. Because if we have a television, well, these things, they can, you know, we flip a switch and they start. They couldn't if there was no energy. And I use that as my metaphor now, that God is here. I don't see God either with these eyes, but I believe it's here. And sometimes when I'm at home and I'm feeling a little down, or I think, well, God, I don't know where you are, I go flip on the television just to remind myself, if there's energy in the room, you're here, God, and then everything's okay, and things will work out. So I've learned to meditate. I learned to meditate when I was 21 years sober. I told you when I went to that place to learn about the old ideas and how they're buried in the subconscious, etc. And when I got back, my sponsor said, I think he said, if you're going to make these kinds of changes, you better learn to meditate. And so I did. I tried two or three. I tried transcendental meditation. Wasn't right. There are various kinds of meditation. But I'm just going to close with this. I've learned something that it's really important to me to believe that God is here. And how do you do that? Like I sometimes used to say to sponsees, just say, God, I know you're here. But that can be pretty flat because the third dimension is pretty powerful. You know, it's the thing we we get with our five senses. And so I started just to help them with this, and I do it myself now. And that is once, just to take 1 minute and just to say, God, I'm going to take 1 minute and I'm just going to clear my mind. I'm not going to think about anybody I hate or love or this or that. I'm just going to be still. And if you want to talk to me, I hope my soul will listen. And then I do it five times a day. You do it once a day and you'll find a change. That will be my little gift to you tonight. It's just been a great pleasure to be here with you.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. So wonderful to see the change in the evil nun. We used to have the good nuns, Rose and different members of AA. She filled a special slot. I saw her in 71, in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. She was one of the best-looking broads I have ever seen in my life. Extraordinary lady. April, come on up here for a minute. We've been talking a lot about life and a lot about getting old and a lot about changes. And I want us all, just for a minute, to look at Dougie. April's not too bad either. But what is it about this child? There are no judgments. We're looking at something that the mind cannot contain. There's a sense of awe. There are very few places left in the world today where human beings are allowed a sense of awe. 50 to 75 years ago, that wasn't quite as true. But technology has gotten us to the point where we think, oh, I know that. An eagle? Yeah, I know that. We think we know. But when we look at Doug, we know we don't know. And it is like looking at God. And the question I want to ask is, why is it so damn different looking at each other? Is there any less mystery? Is there any less grace? Is there any less potential? And yet our minds, because we look at age and we look at money, we look at clothes, we look at the physicality of things, we think we know and we reduce what we see by what the mind is telling us. And I wish that we had more openings. And we have been talking about transition and change and aging. Mildred talked about loneliness, so did Polly. And there is, and as you're older, there is an aloneness that we have, that we make peace with. And there is when your phone is 25% dead, the list of people that are in the phone, when the most important people in your lives, if I were to tell you about my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are 100 people, at least, that were extraordinarily important to Linda and I. There were 20 people, at least, that were life-changing to Linda and I. They're gone. There's one or two left. Ivester was one of the last. Dave Cook is still with us. The saddest part for those of us that have been transformed by the touch of those people is you don't know who the hell they are. And you don't find them as interesting, because that's just the nature of us. We don't find, when we're talking about people who have passed or we used to know, or tell stories about people you have no connection with. And that's part of the loneliness that us older members of Alcoholics Anonymous have, and why it's so important that we stay connected. And the people that you've heard here talk about this weekend, one of the graces we have is that we've been able to stay connected to you. And the vibrancy that you have when you listen to James and Jane, the energy is different. The world is run, our son. I have a pronoun problem. I don't have a son. It's not my son, it's our son. And and he's 50. But the world, that conversation, that energy is what we need in Alcoholics Anonymous today. Not the energy of an 80-year-old guy. The energy of the 25 and 30 and 35-year-old that has always been the core energy of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has always been the people who start the conferences and start the meetings and do that. And it is important. If I had one message to you, I would say replace yourself. You know, we talk about the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have been given such a gift. If we would just replace ourselves, we double the damn organization in whatever period of time it took us to replace ourselves. And I keep that idea. You don't have to have 10. You don't have to have... But replace yourself. And what a gift when you talk about what life is worth, what life is valued. It isn't the money. It isn't the charm. It isn't the... What if you saved a life? I always think of that, you know, if they give awards to firemen and policemen and health workers and people all over the world for doing special things. And sometimes it's just saving a person's life. And the amount of lives that Dave and Polly and, you know, the people in this room have saved and touched is beyond measure. It is just extraordinary, and what a gift that is for us. When Mildred was talking this afternoon about being concerned, concerned about being able to give an appropriate talk. I've been going through that. When you communicate, there comes a time, you know, where if you blow something or you forget something, or I gave a pretty important talk to me and it wasn't very good about a month ago. If I did that when I was 40 or 50, it just wasn't a very good talk. Now I start to wonder if I should keep talking. So it's a deeper conversation in that sort of thing. But what I think is really interesting about those of us that communicate and we're wondering if we still have the ability to do what you are asking us to do. What you're asking us to do is, first of all, to have understood that we have the problem. Secondly, to look at the work and to do the work. Thirdly, to see what you have done. There are lots of people who have done the work and they don't grasp exactly what they've done, but they've done it. And then to be able to give them the gift to communicate that to someone else. So in consciousness, there's physical consciousness that we see in nature, and there's mental consciousness when we talk about mathematics and different financial things that we do. But what we're trying to transmit in our communication is a mystical consciousness. It is a spiritual consciousness. It's not of words. And the mind knows. The mind, every once in a while, you know, I mean, the mind is so concerned about being reduced in importance. I mean, the mind is the mechanism, the raw mental mind is the mechanism of the ego. We try to get beyond that. But the consciousness that brings us beyond it, and the consciousness that Mildred was able to demonstrate in her talk this afternoon, is a spiritual consciousness. It's of God. It is beyond the mind. And the mind knows it's beyond the mind. And so sometimes when we go to take a look at the work that we're trying to do, go on a 12-step call, do something important, every once in a while, we're initiating that conversation with the mind, and the mind knows it's in trouble. Because if all that shows up is that, it's not sufficient. When we ask James to get up and to talk about his 40 years, is it? 38 years. But that sort of thing where we say, stand up, tell us how you did it. The fact is, he doesn't know. It's beyond knowing in the classic sense. We talk about, why do the Zen Buddhists talk about not knowing being preferable? Because it doesn't want to be mind-bound. Being what Eckhart Tolle talks about in almost all his writings is how mind-bound we are. And that, you know, the freedom, you know, I mean, he does one of the great treatises, I think, on ego. And is a very helpful thing to those of us who are talking about ego a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. To be able to transcend ego, to be able to become and realize that we're becoming an individualization of the manifestation of the Spirit. The same Spirit. You know, Mildred talks about being one. You know, are we eyes on a balloon? Do we share the mind? Do we share the Spirit? It's the same Spirit. The Spirit that all of us have is the same Spirit. We're like soaker hoses. We have holes in different places. And some people are like the Bellagio's fountain, but it's... Okay. I think one of the most wonderful things about Alcoholics Anonymous, so many places are trying to teach you something. And I think in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a sense of trying to restore you to the goodness that has always been in you. So the process of getting well and the process of recovery is the process of going home. Chuck Chamberlain, who was Richard Chamberlain's dad and one of the famous members of Alcoholics Anonymous, he was, for many of us, a real hero. He was a step above. He had a clarity that when you listened to him, you could hear music. And your music, by the way, is very cool. It is, and one of the things that is so cool about music and cool about her music is it's beyond mind. You can't contain it in your mind. And so if you're present to it, just you are transformed. You are moved a little bit, which is what the power of this program is, just extraordinary. But Chamberlain, we started a thing called Gopher State Roundup. And we have about 8,000 people. We only had 5,000 this last time because we killed it for a couple of years in COVID. But we would go up in Chamberlain's room about 10 o'clock at night and stay there till about 1 o'clock in the morning. Every night, we had Chamberlain for the first 5 years. We had Chamberlain and Cecil and Mac and, Tom Breen. And one time, Chamberlain looked at me and he said, "Son, you're not going anywhere. You already are everything you're ever going to be." And he said, "I can tell you're disappointed in that." I was hoping to become quite a bit different than I was. And secondly, I didn't understand what the hell he was saying to me. I already was everything I was to become. And I believe that true of everybody in this room. That where you're being transformed to, that where you're moving to, you already are. So what the universe and God is asking us to do is be here now, be who we are. It is, and when we talk about the higher power, one of the greatest things about Alcoholics Anonymous is we don't care what you believe. We simply want to know what your experience is. It's experiential. It is not intellectual. We don't care what you know. We don't care what you believe. We may care what you know intuitively at a different level than mentally. mentally is not able to contain. And it is the experience that all of us have when we bring our damp log to the bonfire of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't happen immediately. It doesn't happen at the snap of a finger. But stay. Stay at the bonfire. And what happens, little by slowly, I think in my lifetime, in the 55, almost 55, I'll be 55 years sober in 3 weeks, I guess, I have probably attended 10,000 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what the number is, but it's bigger than a bread box. It's bigger than 5 and less than 20. And I have probably been exposed, one of my pet peeves in AA is, so we're not supposed to give advice. Well, give me a damn break. I mean, any of us that are sponsors are giving advice. And so people will call you up and say, do you have any specific experience, you know, with that such and such a subject? And it always irritates me because I think what they should be asking, just the fact that they're calling and asking what your opinion might be, do you have good judgment? Do you have familiarity with the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? Do you know how the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous apply to living? So what is special is not the issue so much. And there are certain situations where information about the situation is beneficial, but it's not universal. But do you understand? I always was amazed to sit in Clancy's office and listen to him take 100 telephone calls on Wednesday and give everybody, you know, 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes. If something was seriously wrong, they were checking in. All we're doing is checking in. He would have stopped and changed that and done something different. But what was amazing to me is that in the 30 or 40 or 50 years that he had been sober during those times that I observed him, there probably wasn't a problem you could put in front of him if he wasn't pissed off. There probably wasn't a problem you could put in front of him that he could not give you sound advice on. And for most of us that have been sitting around these rooms for 5 years, going to 3 to 5 meetings a week, 2 to 5, whatever the number is, we have heard descriptions of just about every common issue and problem that families and individuals and workers and husbands and daughters and sons have. If I were to draw a circle and say inside that circle is everything there is to know, and then take a piece of pie out of it and say that's what you don't know. And take another piece of the pie and say, that's what you don't know. I'm sorry, you take the slice of the pie and that's what you know. You take another slice of the pie and that's what you don't know. And the entire rest of the pie is what you don't know and don't know you don't know. Almost everything that I have learned of importance in Alcoholics Anonymous came from the section of the pie that I didn't know and didn't know I didn't know. It is, and it's transforming. You are sitting in a room and you listen to someone say something that it just goes pow. Now, you don't go, oh, that's wonderful, I'm going to write that down. You just have heard something that was profound for you. You have never heard it before. And yet you absolutely know to the core of your being that it's so. Who knows that? We all have a knower. We all have a spot. We all have a part where our connection to the God of our understanding, the connection to our higher power, is one. Same place. Not separate. And it is, where else would we ever go to have the conversations that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous about consciousness, about higher power? Where else would we have this idea that we could bring someone and have them have a spiritual awakening? People would think that you're standing on a corner with a tambourine. And yet, we don't think that. We know that. We know it in our own experience. We have sat in rooms with people who have made changes in their lives for which there is no explanation of. To explain how grateful I am to be in love with my wife, to have shared 55 years in a couple of weeks, to have three sons that we share, that we have love relationships with. And I'm saying this more in the context, if I were to talk about how wonderful our lives are, I say it in the context of gratitude, and I say it in the context that it absolutely was not possible for me to be a participant and a co-creator of whatever that process was without the impact, without the program that you have given us. Thank you.